Hello, guys and gals. Me, Mudahar, and pretty huge day. YouTube's actually lost a pretty serious social media addiction lawsuit. Now, again, this is before all the appeals end up getting filed. Apparently, YouTube was guilty or bared 30% responsibility alongside Facebook, which bared 70% responsibility. About millions of dollars in punitive damages from companies like Facebook, and in fact, around $900,000 from companies like Google. Okay. And of course, this is a huge, huge situation because turns out a lot of this actual focus was on the connection between your kid's mental health and addiction to social media. Now, again, I think addictions are a vice, and in a lot of ways, obviously, they're very terrible. Let's not pretend. And one of the things that I always do find is that, you know, in today's day and age, a lot of kids don't really have access to... I want to say kid-friendly spaces. There's a lot of bad shit on the internet. But before we get into it, there's a lot to cover, so I want to actually look at the original case file. Let's rip the Band-Aid, get right off into the meat and potatoes of this, okay? No 10-minute deliberation of arbitrary abstract facts. Here is, again, the initial, like, you know, filing with KGM, which is Kaylee, in this situation. She was actually one of the people that kind of brought this whole lawsuit over here. So the plaintiff, KGM, brings a actual case here against companies like Meta, ByteDance, Alphabet, and Snap. So in this case, what has actually happened over here is that she has said that as she used the product from 2015, and a lot of this stuff ends in 2025, so she used Instagram, not Facebook, of course, Instagram in 2015, Snapchat in 2017, TikTok as it released pretty much around 2019, and YouTube back all the way in 2011, all right? So she was basically using the stuff, and she said that the physical injury she experienced was addiction and compulsive use, depression, anxiety, self-harm, where she had, situations where she was cutting herself, and of course, she had thoughts of ending her own life. So again, this gets, of course, as you can imagine, very, very serious. And yeah, after all of this, this lawsuit went in for basically years at this point, because that's how the legal situation works. You know, you start suing somebody in 1 year, and you're probably looking at a settlement around year 4 or 5. So for this situation, I decided I'm going to actually look at, you know, some of the actual lawsuits, and I'm going to look through all the paperwork. And one of the most important pieces of paperwork that I found was actually in regards to the 278-page social media addiction master complaint. So actually, this is a pretty telling complaint, and it actually puts a lot of these platforms, specifically Facebook, and to an extent YouTube, in a bad light. I keep saying Facebook, but it's really just Meta. That's their, you know, umbrella company. That's basically Mark's, gift to this world. So to go through it, in page 7, what they actually said was, American children are suffering an unprecedented mental health crisis fueled by defendants' addictive and dangerous social media products. In the past decade, Americans' engagement with social media grew exponentially, nowhere more dramatically than amongst our country's youth. The explosion in usage is no accident. It's a result of defendants' studied efforts to induce young people to compulsively use their products, namely Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, and YouTube. Borrowing heavily from the behavioral and neurobiological techniques used by slot machines and exploited by the cigarette industry. So, you know, we're tying in big gambling, big tobacco, might as well even throw in all the other bigs in this case, right? But so they said that the defects in the defendant's products vary by platform, but all exploit children and adolescents. They include, but are not limited to, an algorithmically generated endless feed to keep users scrolling in an induced flow state, intermittent variable rewards that manipulate dopamine delivery to intensify use, trophies to reward extreme usage, metrics and graphics to exploit social comparison, incessant notifications that encourage repetitive account checking. So they say today, over a third of 13 to 17-year-old kids report using one of defendants' apps almost constantly and admit that this is too much. So before we continue, I kind of want to like level and say that this is a little similar, I find, to lawsuits involving Valve, for instance, when it came to gambling, right? Like the case unboxings, which basically, let's be completely honest, are slot machines that you pay Valve $2, 49 cents Canadian to spin every so often. Now, the thing about it is, in a lot of ways, what we're going to talk about with this lawsuit is it's going to touch upon things like I guess you could say age verification. I guess you could say the locking down of the internet. It's going to intersect with that. This is a story in a situation where I think everyone has actually failed. The victim, the primary victim that's being talked about in this case, all over, right? So I don't want to just sit here and say that I need to take a specific side from one angle. I'm not going to sit here and defend companies like Facebook and Google and Snapchat for deliberately creating systems that I think are meant to be addictive. But I'm also not going to defend the parents 100% because when you actually look into the story, even the parents have done a pretty spectacular fucking job of failing their child, right? So let's just keep a level head, right? I think a lot of these cases happen because companies like Facebook, companies like Google, companies like Valve even, basically let a bad situation and behavior brew and fester to the point that eventually a lawsuit comes down, and that lawsuit and what happens after these companies lose is actually a big, big loss for a lot of us in another way going forward, right? If a company like Facebook or Google decides to push for age verification and identity verification because of lawsuits like this, and we'll get to why, that ultimately is a loss for us, simply because the parents failed and these companies were too fucking addicted with the aspect of raising their revenues through the roof. So right over here, you can see that when it comes to page 50, the factual allegations, so Meta operates and designs Facebook and Instagram, two of the world's most popular social media products. In 2022, 2 billion users, yada, yada, yada. Meta understands that its products are used by kids under 13. So these are apparently direct quotations. There are definitely kids this age on IG. They aren't supposed to be on IG at all. It understands that its products are addictive. Teens feel addicted, and this is a quote, to IG and feel a pressure to be present like addicts. They feel that they are unable to stop themselves from being on IG. And three, the tools we currently have aren't effective at limiting their time on the app. So it understands that addictive use leads to problem. It just keeps coming back, even when it stops being good for them. And again, when you look at these quotes specifically, they come from internal communications at Meta, right? Their own internal documentation. So again, it understands that these problems can be so extreme as to include encounters between adults and minors, such as sex talks, 32 times more prevalent on Instagram than on Facebook, and driven largely by a single product defect. Despite this knowledge, Meta has abjectly failed at protecting child users of Instagram and Facebook. Rather than stand up a five-alarm effort to stop the problems created by its product, the mental health team stopped doing things, it was defunded, completely stopped. And again, this is all coming from these internal documentations that came out through this lawsuit. So despite what Zuckerberg himself was even warning about, we are not on track to succeed for our core well-being topics, problematic use, bullying and harassment, connections, and SSI, are at an increased regulatory risk and external criticism. So Meta did nothing. Yet Meta did nothing, and its reason was simple. The growth impact was too high. Taking action would lower usage of, and therefore lower profits, earned from a critical audience segment. Youth and teens are critically important to Instagram. There's a new group of 13-year-olds every year, and the competition over their social media engagement has never been more fierce. So again, it's pretty damning to read shit like this, and it's one of the reasons why you have to read these lawsuits and you have to read what has come out to see why the jury, even after seeing everything that we're about to talk about, because there's still a lot more, has kind of pinned a lot of that blame on Meta and also YouTube. So according to more internal documentation that was gathered in this, you can see with the quotations over here, Meta did nothing. Its reason was, again, that the growth impact was too high. Meta's frequent gestures towards youth safety were never serious and always driven by public relations. It's all theater. Meta offered tools to kids and parents, like time spent, that it knew presented false data. Our data is currently shown is incorrect. We're sharing bad metrics externally. We vouch for these numbers. And again, this is quoted as an internal document from Meta. It came out basically as a result of this lawsuit. It's fucked up to see. It's just fucked up, man. It really is. Like, you know, like, you can sit here and say that the implications of a lawsuit being used to further push for bad agenda is one thing, but when you start to see how bad these companies basically really are, you can see that basically the hell that they are brought on is because of their own actions, you know? I am, however, a little bit more interested in the Google YouTube section. So here, when it comes to Google, they said that the Google engineers algorithms to recommend videos to YouTube users. So basically they said was they want to build their algorithms in 2008. So this is when they started building it. The goal was to maximize how long users spent watching YouTube videos. So again, you can see that a former YouTube engineer explained that when he designed YouTube's algorithm, YouTube wanted to optimize for one key metric, which was watch time. The engineer elaborated that increasing users' watch time is actually just good for the business model because the more hours you watch, the more likely you are to see another ad show up on the video. So that's primarily the aspect that they went to. So again, that's basically how they discussed it over here. They also talked about how the current algorithm uses deep learning neural networks, a type of software that returns output based on the data fed into it. So basically, they're just talking about a recommendations engine. So when you watch videos on the internet, you basically are given the kind of videos that YouTube expects you to watch. So let's say that I watch Linux content, you know, every day. There's probably a good chance that my recommendations are going to be filled with Linux content. If you start watching any other type of content, you know, whether you watch a video or two from a totally different bracket, you'll notice that, whoa, my recommendations also fucking just completely changed out of nowhere. So that's how that aspect works, right? They basically want to keep you addicted onto their platform. Look, if you look at social media as like bars, right? Like bars on Central Street. Every bar wants you to spend most of its time there because as long as they can get you through the doors, they expect you to basically be buying a drink, buying something every so often. Your time, your attention at that location is what drives up other revenues and keeps you more important. Because if you have all the people in your neck of the woods, in your platform, they're not going to be wasting their hours on another platform, spending money, watching an ad here and there. That's all how this works. And because of all this, you have to make your content or your platform just that addicting. It's why even video games, everything basically involves, you know, hiring some of the most invasive psychologists to get you involved and your hooks deep into you. You know, it's kind of similar in a lot of ways, and this is a side tangent to things that I've noticed in today's society, or like, for instance, Kalshi is a platform, and I don't really like this platform, but it's a gambling platform. They call it a prediction market, but basically the idea here is that some guy will click on something like, how long will the government shutdown last? They'll go in there, they'll buy into either a yes or no. Basically, they're gambling. They're putting their money in a prediction market, basically gambling on an outcome. And nobody knows how the stuff will work, but it's interesting to see that, you know, for people who say that gambling is such an addictive vice, they immediately turn their eyes around and ignore things like sports betting, for instance. I have met people that have said that there's science to this kind of stuff. There is no science to gambling. The reality of it is gambling is a disorder that, much like drugs like cocaine, heroin, nicotine, or alcohol, gambling activates the brain's reward systems, which is powered by dopamine. Similar drugs, similar phenomenon brought up in these lawsuits. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter inside the brain that reinforces sensations of pleasure and connects those sensations with certain behaviors or actions. So gambling, unlike any other addiction, is associated with cognitive distortions. So people say, if I keep gambling, then eventually I'll win. You don't say that about alcohol, tobacco, cocaine. And that's actually kind of true, right? People do get locked. They get locked into this pit where they're just throwing their money away. And I guess you could say that to an extent, a similar parallel could exist for sites like Instagram, Facebook, even YouTube, right? And I think it's probably gotten worse. Like, as a general user, I'll fully admit to this, right? Like, when I started watching other people's content on YouTube, even before I made my own content, there was an application. I used to watch it on an iPad. So you click on YouTube, you go to the subscriptions tab. And back then, the subscriptions window was just a chronological display of every account you subscribe to. So if I subscribe to Markiplier, if I subscribe to Smosh, if I subscribe to Epic Mealtime back in the day, I would get chronological releases from all those three creators. Now, I don't even feel that that's what YouTube is about anymore. It's like, hey, listen, here is a video you watched on Monday. Now, the rest of your week is similar types of videos fed from a whole wide variety of creators. And maybe that works to keep you addicted onto the platform, but I don't think that that's necessarily healthy or beneficial for the creator economy. And when you look at platforms like Facebook or Instagram, it gets even worse. You know, if you start to just sit on Instagram, you'll probably spend your days doom scrolling or swiping up and down. Same can happen for Twitter, same can happen for any social media platform. Is there an aspect of addiction that exists? Absolutely. Nobody should really be denying that. And I think the real crime here is that the platforms have failed the victim in this case, but it's time to also look at even the parents as well, too. So actually over here, Meta, their defense lawyers, came up and said that these struggles did stem from other causes, including a learning disability and a difficult home life. Her parents divorced when she was 3, and the father was largely absent. Trial evidence also showed her mother was at times physically and emotionally abusive, including a secretly recorded video of her yelling at Kaylee when Kaylee was 13. Her sister did attempt taking her own life and was later hospitalized for an eating disorder. So the argument that Meta had brought up was, if you took Instagram away, would anything be different? And you have to understand, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff that is brought into this trial. A lot of these things were shown. It wasn't just that the jury was blasted with this out of nowhere. Meta made sure to show the jury all of this context. And even after all this context, the jury still said that Facebook and YouTube were primarily the ones that they were holding responsible. Now, again, I'm not here to defend the parent in this case. I'm just giving you the further context. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube probably did contribute to some extent of their social, at least that was fucking talked about in court. This whole situation too was also discussed in court as well. But again, when the attorney brings up, if you took away social media, would anything be different? Again, a defense attorney bringing up what appears to be an alternate causal reality is something that happens in a court of law. That's what defense attorneys fucking do. Now, of course, obviously, I wanted to look at what Courthouse News Service they brought up. They kind of talked about her actual testimony. So Kaylee said that the first thing she did when she woke up was right after school, and then late at night, she was on social media every single day. She said she wanted to keep up with what was happening amongst her classmates, and when she started watching videos, which play in an endless, continuous stream. She said she always wanted to see what the next one was. One day she said she spent 16 hours on Instagram. I mean, that is some fucking insane screen time. Kaylee said she disliked how she looked, especially in photographs, which, you know, something that has happened even when I was a kid, right? Like body image issues. In an early YouTube video played in court, she can be heard saying, "I don't know why I look so fat in this shirt." "Put a filter on it" became a common refrain from her and her friend group. One day, according to notes with a former therapist, a peer took pictures of her with her own phone. When she saw them unfiltered, she started crying and had what she referred to as a meltdown. Her phone usage was a constant source of tension between her and her mother. When Kaylee's mother took away her phone, Kaylee said, "A huge part of me felt like it was missing. I couldn't see who was liking my stuff. It was just like a panic." So attorneys for Meta and Google have sought to play down the effects of social media on Kaylee's life, pointing instead on, you know, other factors. So, you know, the fact that she had a learning disability, anxiety and depression, real-life bullying, the use of other platforms like TikTok and Snapchat, and of course her tumultuous home life. So when Meta's attorney, Phyllis Jones, asked about an Instagram post in which Kaylee talked about her mother screaming at her public, Kaylee said, "It was dramatized by me to get attention." So then Jones, again the Meta attorney, plays two video clips that have been posted by Kaylee on social media, which included audio of Kaylee's mother shrieking at her. In one, the mother screams, "You're too fucking lazy to take care of your dog. It must have been scary to have your mom yelling at you like that." So that's what the Meta attorney keeps saying. And then Kaylee's like, "I think it was." But then she added, "I posted it, but without the full context, it's her yelling about something I did. Most of the time, it was over chores." So when she was asked about physical abuse, "Was it the case that your mom would hit you when you didn't understand your math homework?" Joan said. Kaylee said she did that a few times. She later admitted that her mom called her dumb and stupid a couple times, although that may have been before she was diagnosed with a learning disability. She said she was also affected by her mental health struggles of her older sister who tried to take her own life. So again, this girl was failed by a lot of people, okay? She had a lot of bad cards dealt to her. And, you know, there was a lot of, obviously there was a tumultuous home life here. And that tumultuous home life did have her going to social media and basically being thrown into the lion's den in that regard. So The reason why I say it failed is, obviously, I don't think her mom is necessarily a great fucking mom. It doesn't matter if your kid has a learning disability or not. If you're calling them dumb and stupid, you're a fucking dog shit parent. Simple as that. You know, if you're yelling at them constantly, and if there is situations where you're physically hitting your kid, I don't care if you want to come from a fucking generation and say, back when I was a kid, I used to fucking get completely thrown around the house. That's never okay, okay? Hitting your kid is just a sign of you being a fucking dog shit adult that can't handle a situation like that, okay? That is at least my personal belief in the situation, right? But ultimately, at the end of the day, right? Like when we all get serious about it, I think that's bad parenting. And it's also bad parenting that, you know, she doesn't really enforce any level of parental control. Like, here, I'll just yoink your phone away. You're not going to sit there and talk to your kid about how dangerous these things can be or why you shouldn't be so terminally connected onto the internet and that reality matters more. These are conversations that my parents genuinely did have with me. And I think it probably did shape how I had a relationship to the internet. Now, on the other hand, when she goes to fucking Facebook and Google and Instagram and all these other sites, she's basically going to a group of, you know, big tech assholes that want to take advantage of her eyeballs, her brain, her time, her addictive personality to this, like, platform and use that to basically make more money. To the platforms, it doesn't matter if she's a person that has been abused or whatever. They don't fucking care about that. They just care if you're using their platform, okay, for hours upon hours a day. So, again, both sides have completely failed this person, right? That's the reality of this lawsuit. And I think the lawsuit does a fairly good way of painting, you know, these addictive, you know, methods in these platforms as bad. They knowingly built addictive platforms, and now that they let them fester for so long, people are finally bringing these lawsuits up and they're finally bringing actual action against these big tech companies. So yeah, you know, to an extent, you have to look at the situation and look at it with a super nuanced take. And here's the thing, to an extent, I can kind of sit there and agree with her and think, you know, if Facebook and Google keep getting hit with this kind of crap, it's probably going to lead to them saying, listen, let's just implement global identity verification, full age verification, so we can just keep those children off the platforms. But look, a week ago I talked about how Facebook, you know, possibly was the one that was pushing in tons of money to get app stores to have, you know, app store or OS level age verification. Just so, you know, in a roundabout way, a lot of these companies would then be able to grab that information without technically be liable for grabbing information. Like, if you can't grab the information that somebody's under the age of 18 or 13 or whatever their age range is, but you can just get an age range identifier from like an app store through an API, then congratulations, you basically harbored information. You gathered information without claiming to gather that information. It's a weird turnabout situation. And ultimately, these kind of laws, you know, now that Google and Meta have been found sort of like, I guess you could say civilly liable for this shit, maybe it will get overturned, maybe it won't, who knows? All right, so in order to really understand where this is going to, we have to talk a little bit about Section 230. So I'm going to give you guys a quick little bit of a primer as to where this all started. So this is a lawsuit, Stratton Oakman Inc. versus Prodigy Services. Now, Prodigy was sort of this online service that held a bulletin board called Money Talk. Now, again, to give you an idea what was happening is there were actual mentions, a unidentified user submitted a post claiming that Stratton Oakman, which was a security investment banking firm in Long Island, and its president, Danny Perouche, had committed criminal and fraudulent acts in connection with a stock IPO. So Stratton Oakman decided that they were not just going to sue anybody, they were going to sue Prodigy, as well as that unidentified poster, for defamation. Now obviously, listen, whoever was posting, that was the guy that was actually making the defamatory claim. But why go after a website that literally just existed as a place for people to publish user-generated content? Now, it's because of Section 230 that it allows everyone to basically upload information on the internet or talk about things without keeping the platform holder liable. It's because of this reason that YouTube allows you to make videos, and even if your video, say, defames somebody, YouTube is not, or Google or Alphabet is not held liable for the shit you say on their platform. Now, basically, the way that this kind of functions over here is, obviously, this was designed for, you know, an internet of old. This is back in the 90s, the late 90s. So, you know, is there a room for Section 230 to get somewhat reformed? I think the answer to this is kind of simple, right? Like, or not really simple. I shouldn't say any of this is simple. I don't think that the big tech companies really do want Section 230 to be amended against them. And by against them, I mean,
You know, if we look at addictive social media patterns, we look at addictive platforms and addictive algorithms, if Section 230 was to say, listen, we're not going to hold you liable for people's free speech, but, you know, let's focus on your addictive algorithms. And maybe you shouldn't be peddling this stuff to children or, hell, even adults as freely as you do. Maybe that would be a different story. But where this is kind of headed to is a lot of these social media platforms will say, listen, you know, if you want us to, you know, produce our stuff, if you want us to distribute this, you know, content, if you want us to, you know, keep our businesses alive, then sure, let's implement identity verification, get kids completely thrown off, and gather data in a totally separate way. Look, I think it's great that we're talking about, you know, addictive algorithms. It's not great if you're somebody like Mark Zuckerberg because your whole business is kind of reliant on this shit. If tomorrow, you know, actual, you know, big tech balls were to be snipped over this, it would cause pandemonium out in fucking Silicon Valley, out in San Francisco. So that's unfortunately kind of the reality. With this lawsuit and its ruling, I want to just preface this by saying, personally, I think because Google, Facebook, and a lot of these companies kind of let this shit fester for so long, ultimately it's us who exist on the internet are kind of ultimately paying some sort of price.
I think everyone has failed the addictive victims in this situation. And look, in some ways, I'm not going to lie to you, I wish we could go back to the days where the internet was this kind of beautiful little thing where, you know, people just had a website for every goofy thing out there versus these same seven websites with their same addictive recommendations and algorithms, and everything just sort of like, homogenized into this like one central seven website system that we currently have that also just is run by people that ultimately don't care about the actual harms that they cause to a society, no matter if you're a minor or a fucking adult, right? To me, I don't mind seeing companies like Facebook, Meta, even Google to an extent face some level of backlash from people because I think the kind of stuff that they do is dangerous, right? I think that the kind of stuff that they feed to their people, I think the brain rot that they feed to individuals and the stuff they put these kids in situations is not good, all right? I think that there needs to be some level of oversight there. I think there needs to be some level of accountability. But I just don't know how one can achieve that without ultimately leading to other laws cascading and destroying the internet. It's a really complicated situation, but wild lawsuit indeed. If you like what you saw, please like, comment, and subscribe. Dislike it if you dislike it. I am out.